Well, we're going to do days 241 through 244, but mostly I want you, oh, and by the way, would you greet the newlyweds as they are making their way down the aisle? That was a joy Thursday afternoon to celebrate Frank and Debbie's marriage in this place, and it truly is a joy indeed. Okay, so if you've got a Bible with you, great. If not, take one out of the pew rack. Turn to Matthew chapter, the end of chapter 19, verse 20. We're going to make our way through four of Jesus' parables today, and we're going to try and locate them so we really understand the punch, the significance that's going on there. So the first one is the parable of the workers in the vineyard, and that's found in the first 16 verses of Matthew 20. But I want you to look at the context. Let's start at the end of Matthew chapter 19, and this is the one that we wrapped up last week, the rich in the kingdom of God, where the young man says, "What do I need to do to inherit eternal life?" Remember, Jesus said, "You lack one thing, go and sell everything that you have and go and give it to the poor." At any rate, and then Peter says, "Hey, we've left everything to follow you. What about us?" And in the end of Matthew 19, we read this, "Truly I tell you at the," what's the next word? The renewal of what? Okay, when you think of the end of the age, the last days, what image comes to your mind? What's the first thought that you think of? Anybody? Not all at once. There is no trap door that's going to open. Anybody? What's that? All right, joy. Total destruction, all right? Anybody else? What do you think of?
Death.
All right, anybody else? Confusion, okay? Yeah. What does Jesus talk about? He talks about the renewal of all things. And the word here is a Greek word. I'm going to throw it out, 25 cents, okay? Palingenesis. Palingenesis, to be created again. So what Jesus is saying happens at the end of this age is a new creation. It is going to be the renewal of all things. Does that change your image of what the end of the age is going to be? How many of you go, never thought of it that way before? C.S. Lewis, in one of the Chronicles, I love this image. I forget which one it's in. Lauren, you can probably help me. Anyhow, you've got an old cabbie and his wife in London. And the old cabbie and the wife, they've been married so long they look like each other and the dog. And the cab looks like it's being held together by baling wire and duct tape. And the horse looks like it's two steps from the glue farm, all right? And all of creation is just, it's dark, nothing is growing. And then suddenly, Lewis puts Aslan, the Christ figure, in the middle, and he begins to sing. And as he begins to sing, literally everything starts to be made new. And everything comes to life in creation. And then the old cabbie becomes this glorious young stud, and his wife becomes this just incredibly beautiful thing. And the old cab becomes a glorious coach, and the horse becomes this black charger. And this is Lewis's understanding of what's going to happen at the end of the age. It is going to be Christ making all things new. And so that's how, when you and I think about the end of the age and the age to come, when I would do funerals or interments, either cremains or a bodily interment in the cemeteries up in the Sun Valley area, they all had pine trees around. And I would go pick up pine cones And I would, with the people who were there, oftentimes especially with children, I'd hand them the pine cone. And I would say, what does this look like to you? And what would they say? Yeah, there's some symmetry to it, all right, but does it look like much? No, not at all. But if you bury it in the ground, what? What are you going to get? You're going to get one of those pine trees. That's the image Paul uses in 1 Corinthians. He says, unless a seed is buried in the ground, and what's the seed he's talking about? Point at yourself and say, my body. That's what he's talking about. He's talking about the physical body. He says, unless a seed is buried in the ground, what? It won't what? Nothing comes forth. And it's when our bodies are buried in the ground and at the renewal of all things, what's going to happen to these bodies? They're going to be what? Lewis said, if you and I could see someone in their glorified state, we would be tempted to worship them. That's what the renewal of all things is like. So whatever you think about the end of the age when Christ returns, we're going to hear about accountability, but first and foremost, it is about what? The renewal of creation and the renewal of those who love Him, of our bodies. And it is going to be a physical creation. I had to, sophomore in high school, I had to memorize this wretched poem about heaven. And I remember thinking, if that's what it is, I don't want to go. Because it was about sitting on a cloud plucking harps of angel hair. Thank you very much. No thank you very much at all. Now truly, Jesus says, I tell you, at the renewal of all things, when the whom? Who's the Son of Man? Jesus. Okay, he is using it, the New Testament uses, first of all, to talk about his humanity. He is fully human, but it also is a reference to his identity. And keep your finger in Matthew 19. Turn to Daniel chapter 7. Okay? Daniel chapter 7. And I'm starting at, I think, verse 13, if my eyes will focus. I suffer from presbyopia, which will also be made new in the renewal of all things. Okay, this is Daniel. And in my vision at night, there before me was one like a what? What does it say? What are the next three words? One like a what? How many of you haven't found it yet? Okay, Daniel 7. Daniel 7, verse 13. Everybody got it? Okay. Daniel. Yeah. Right after Ezekiel. Okay. I'm sure that helps a lot. It's on page 929 in my Bible, which will not help you at all in your Bible. 766. All right, thank you. All right. So verse 13, Daniel says, in my vision at night I looked, and there before me was one like a what? Son of Man. So when Jesus uses Son of Man, you've got to think about Daniel 7. Now listen to what he sees. Where was this Son of Man coming from? Coming from the clouds of what? He's coming down from heaven. Who did he approach? Who is the Ancient of Days? Somebody say God. Right. All right. Okay. He approached the Ancient of Days, and he was what? What happened with him? He was led into whose presence? Into God's presence. Now, what was he given? He was given, first of all, authority. What next? Glory and what? Sovereign power. All nations and peoples of every language, what are the next two words? Wait a minute. They did what? Wait a minute. I thought you only worship God. So what's going on here, friends? Huh? What's that, Frank?
Well, they're telling the truth.
Okay, they're telling the truth. Thank you. That's profound. Who is the Son of Man? What does he have to be? He has to be God. Otherwise, can you worship someone who's not God? No. So this one, this Son of Man, let me get back to Daniel 7, all nations and peoples of every language worshiped him. His dominion is going to last how long? Everlasting. Will it ever pass away? How about his kingdom? Matthew 19. Okay. When the whom? Who is Jesus claiming to be? He is claiming to be the Son of Man figure from Daniel chapter 7. His humanity and his what? Deity. When the Son of Man, now where is he going to sit? On a glorious throne. Okay? You who have followed me, you also are going to sit on 12. Now he's answering Peter's question. You're going to sit on 12 thrones, and who are you going to be judging? Okay. Everyone who's left houses, brothers, sisters, father, mother, wife, children, fields for my sake will receive how much? 100 times as much, but even more than that, what'll you get? But many who are what? Are going to be. And many who are last, going to be first. Yes, okay. Now, let me give you when people first translated the Gospels, were there verses? Were they divided up into chapters? No. You know what they were? They were just one long run-on sentence. Okay, let me give you an example. God is N-O-W-H-E-R-E. N-O-W-H-E-R-E. God is what? God is nowhere. Or if you divide it differently, God is now here. Okay, so you got to know where to divide things. Sometimes the chapter divisions are helpful. Sometimes they're not. In this instance, I don't think it's very helpful at all because at the end of Jesus' parable, in verse 16 of chapter 20, what does it say? The last will be first and the first will be last. In other words, this parable really just carries on through from what he's just said to Peter. So now let's go to the parable. The kingdom of heaven is like a what? Landowner. He goes out early in the morning. We're talking the 6 a.m. shift, all right? And what's he looking to? He drives out in his Ford F-100 or Chevy, depending on whether you're a Chevy guy or a Ford guy. All right. He goes out, and what's he looking to do? He's looking to fill up the back of the pickup with people to do what? Work in the vineyard. And he agreed to pay them something. How much? One denarius. That's a day's wage for how long? For the whole day. Sent them into the vineyard. 9 in the morning, he goes for a coffee break, and he gets into town, and what does he see? More people standing around looking for work, doing nothing. So he said, you also go work in my vineyard, and I will pay you whatever is right. So what did they do? We're hired. Okay, he goes out about noon and about 3 in the afternoon and did the same thing. And then at 5 in the afternoon, he went out and he found others who are still standing around. And what did he ask them in verse 6? Why you been standing here all day long doing nothing? And what was they answer? What was their answer? Nobody hired us. So he said to them, get in the back. You're also going to work in my vineyard. Now, 6 o'clock comes. The owner of the vineyard said to his supervisor, call them all, pay them their wages, beginning with the which one? The last one, okay, you see there's the connection running through here. and then going to the first. So the workers who were hired at 5 in the afternoon came, and how much did they get? Ooh, wait a minute. So then those came who were hired first. What did they expect? Why? Absolutely, right? I mean, if you're fair, this guy worked an hour, I've worked all day. So obviously you expect him to be fair, right? Now, careful how you answer that. Okay, when they got it, they began to grumble. There's a great Greek word, gungudzo. Okay, they grumble and they against the landowner. The men who were hired last only worked 1 hour, they said, and you've made them equal to us who've borne the burden of the work and the heat of the day. But he answered and said, friend, I'm not being unfair to you. Didn't you agree to work for a denarius? What's the answer? Yes, you did. Thank you very much. Take your money and go. I want to give the one who was hired last the same amount I gave you. Don't I have the right to do what I want with my own money? Or are you envious because I am generous? So the last will be, and the first. What on earth is he saying? Not all at once. Okay, so Jerry's question is, okay, the thief on the cross, okay, he's criminal, he's hanging there, one's railing against Jesus, this one says, don't you know what's going on? What does he say to Jesus? Remember me, what? When you come into your kingdom, and Jesus said, I'm sorry you haven't done enough, or I'm sorry you haven't been good enough. Right? Is that what he says to the man? Alistair Begg's got a great sermon that this guy on the cross shows up at the gates of heaven. And Peter looks at him and says, why should I let you in? He says, the guy hanging on the cross told me to come here. That's why. So do you think the ones who had followed Jesus for 3 years and said, wait a minute, he's hanging on a cross as a criminal, and Jesus says, you get in today? Is that fair? Jane and I, we had a wonderful dinner one night this week, and visiting with a wonderful couple, not the most religious guy, in fact, quite confused. Mama was Jewish, Daddy was Christian. He said, you mean it's never too late? Anybody ever jealous of, let's see, I've lived my life. I could be convicted of a number of things, but there's a number of heinous things that I have never done. Now, Jeffrey Dahmer, you remember him, fine, upstanding citizen. Jeffrey Dahmer claimed to have put his trust in Christ before he died. Is it fair of God to let Jeffrey Dahmer in? Yeah. Oh, it's God's game. Well, but is God being fair? I mean, wait a minute. Look how you've lived your life. And he gets in ahead of you. Is that fair? Cheryl? Obviously, he was a demented man, that evil. Maybe he was demon-possessed. How many of you are glad that you are not God? I'm glad that you're not, and I'm glad that I'm not. I don't know. I have no idea what went on in Jeffrey Dahmer's heart. But is God being fair? What's the answer to the question? What do you and I deserve from God? Do you know what nothing is? It's a zero with the rim kicked off. What do you and I deserve from God? Say it with me. Nothing. What I deserve is justice. What do I get? I get grace. How about some of those Jewish followers of Jesus later on when the gospel, Paul's taking the gospel out into the Roman world, and some of those Jewish followers of Jesus are saying, wait a minute, what's with those Gentiles out there claiming to get in on our game? We've been here first. What on earth is Paul telling them to do? What's that all about? And then you have the great first council in Acts 15, and James, the brother of Jesus who was presiding, and he's listened to everything, and he's saying, brothers and sisters, what Paul is saying is right because it's what the prophets taught. So anytime you and I start to think that we should have a leg up spiritually on anybody, what should we remind ourselves? No. No, the only leg up that we have is what? It's a five-letter word, starts with G, ends with E. What's it called? Grace. And grace is God giving us what none of us deserve. It is free, but is it costly? It is costly because it cost God the life of his son, one that he was willing to pay because he loves you and he loves me. That's what Lauren talked about this morning, the love of God. So anybody, you know, if I'm in line, the one that says, you know, there's the two lines in heaven. One says entrance to heaven. The other says information about heaven. Yeah, the information line's longer, you know, about that. So if I'm in line and somebody gets a cut in front of me, is that okay? Absolutely. In fact, if somebody's escorted to, now the great story, of course, you get there. You're walking through heaven. I've told this before. I'm sure you come to this wall that says silence, and you walk for a mile. And then you get to the other end and it says you can talk again. And you go, what was that all about? Well, that's where the Lutherans live. They think they're the only ones here. So you can tell that on anybody, all right? I'm picking on Jerry this morning. I could have picked on the Catholics or the Presbyterians. All of us, it is by grace that we get there. And it is when we are there, it is going to be the renewal of all things. Wild. Lewis ends the Chronicles of Narnia further up and further in. And that's what life is going to be. Parker, you're going to love it. It's your kind of place when we get there. Okay, now turn over to Matthew 25. Now we're going to come to three parables. But before you get to Matthew 25, we've got to get to the end of Matthew 24. When you're in Matthew chapter 24, verse 36, what is the title in the Bible ahead of that passage? The day and the hour are what? Unknown. We've laughed about this. When is Christ returning? What's the answer? Soon. And when is soon? Soon. Okay. Who knows when it's coming? One person only. The Father. Jesus said, I don't know. The Father is the only one who knows. But Jesus, Matthew in chapter 24, is talking about the time when Christ is going to return. Now, there is something very implicit in all of these parables. The first thing that we've looked at is who Jesus is, the Son of Man. Here's the second thing that is implicit. What you and I do in this life, with the life we've been given, makes a significant difference in what our experience is in the age to come. Otherwise, Jesus wouldn't be telling these parables that he tells. When's it coming? Come on. When's he coming? Soon. When's soon? I don't know. So Jesus tells a parable, the 10 virgins, about at that time. Okay, he's tying into this. At that time, the kingdom of heaven is going to be like what? 10 virgins who took their lamps, and what did they do? Went out to meet the bridegroom. Now, I thankfully had one daughter with my wife. She has a daughter as well, same one. Thankfully, we paid for one wedding, all right? 150 out-of-town guests in Sun Valley. We ate jelly bread for the next year after this was over, all right? But it was a great joy. But that wedding started 5 o'clock in the afternoon. 10 o'clock that night, Jane and I clinked a wine glass and said, we couldn't imagine a better day. Gentlemen and ladies, weddings in the Middle East would go on 5 to 10 days, okay? How's your pocketbook feeling with that, all right? Part of the culture, I'll never forget, we saw this one night. The bridegroom comes out of his house, and he comes with his groomsmen with torchlights, and they are on the way to the bride's house. And the bridesmaids, when they see the bridegroom and his party coming, what do? They light their torches and they join the processional to the bride's house, and then they all go back to the groom's house together because the groom's father has said, everything's ready, now go get your sweetheart and bring her home. So you've got 10 virgins. What happened with five of them? Five of them were smart. And what made them smart? They were prepared. What made them prepared? What did they bring? Brought a little extra oil. Why? Well, you can never depend on a bridegroom to know when he's going to come, all right? Okay, you expect him. He's, you know, the invitation said 7 o'clock, right? What time does he show up? Midnight. No, he comes at midnight, all right? And the foolish ones, what did they not bring? They didn't bring any extra oil. The bridegroom was a long time coming. When is Jesus going to come? How many generations have been waiting for his appearing? It's been a long time coming. I remember Bob Dylan's great song, Slow Train Coming. All right? You got to serve somebody. So the bridegroom was a long time coming. And what did they become? Drowsy. And what did they start to do? At midnight, the cry rings out. What is it? Here comes the bridegroom. Come out to meet him. And so all of the virgins woke up and trimmed their lamps. The foolish ones said to the wise ones, what did they say? They're socialists. Okay, what did they say? Give us some of your oil. The wise virgin said, there may not be enough for both us and you. You go buy some oil. You go to those who sell oil at midnight and buy some for yourselves. While they were on their way to buy the oil, who arrives? The bridegroom. The virgins who were ready, what did they do? Went with him into the wedding banquet. And what happened as soon as they went in? Later the others came. Sir, sir, open the door for us. He replied, I tell you, what? I don't know you. Now, what is Jesus' point in this parable in the next line? Keep watch. Why? You don't know the day or the hour when he's going to come. Is that just as true today as it was 2,000 years ago when he told this parable? Okay? Is he coming? Man, if he's not, we're screwed. Don't know any other way to say it. That's our only hope that we have. When's he coming? Okay? So what should we be doing? Keeping watch. Does that mean I don't go about everything else that I'm doing, my work, my pleasure, my life? Of course not. But in the midst of doing so, what is the hope that sustains you through this, the expectation? Keep watch. Next parable. Again, carrying on. This is the second parable. He's coming. This is Jesus. This is not me. It's like a man going on a journey. He called his servants and he entrusted his what? His wealth to them. These are his money managers, okay? He turns his investments over to him. And he says to the one, he gives how many? How much gold? Five. Another gets how much? Two. And how much the third? Okay, each according to their to the kind of returns that they produced in the past, okay? Then what does he do? He goes on his journey. The man who received the 5 bags of gold, what did he do? You want to hire this guy, right? This is the guy you want. He takes the 5 bags of gold. What does he do? He goes out and he doubles the money. How about the guy with 2? Same thing. The guy who received 1 bag went off. What does he do with it? Digs a hole in the ground and he hid the master's money. What are the next 4 words? After a long time, who comes? And what's the first thing on his mind? Kay, the CPA, speaks up. We're going to settle accounts. And the man who had received 5 bags of gold, what did he do? Was he thrilled to bring this report? You better betcha. Master, hey, you did what? You entrusted me with 5 bags of gold. See, I've done what? Here's 5 more. I've doubled your money. The master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful in a what? How does the master regard the wealth? It's a what? It's a few things, all right? I'm going to put you in charge of what? Many things. Come and share your master's, what's the next word? Happiness. The man with 2 bags also came. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 2 bags of gold. I've got 2 more. The master replied, well, why couldn't you have done as good as the guy with 5? So, am I wrong? Wrong? Not it? Not what he's saying? What does Jesus say? Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful in a what? A few things. I'm going to put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. Tell me what their attitude toward the master was. Huh? No. Well, even before the accounting, what was their attitude toward him? Honor him, yeah. Being entrusted with something like that and going away and you put that kind of trust in me, wow, thank you very much. I'm going to be diligent about what you've given me to do here. Then the man who received 1 bag of gold came. Master, I knew that you are a what? You are hard, and you'd put 3 letters behind that. I know that you harvest where you've not sown, and I know that you gather where you don't scatter seed. So I was what? I was afraid. And I went out and I hid your gold in the ground. So here's what belongs to you. Take it back. Ooh. The master replied, you wicked, what's the next word? Lazy servant. So you knew I harvest where I've not sown and gather where I haven't scattered seed? Well, what should you have at least done? For crying out loud, put it in the bank and earn passbook savings, right? And if you'd done that, what would the response have been? Well done. Well done, good and faithful servant. But because, what's his attitude toward the master? Ungrateful. What else? What other words do you use? Untrusting, okay, yeah. Afraid of him. What else? Hard man. What else? Lazy. Okay, who's he blaming for his... He's blaming the master. It's the master's fault that I didn't do anything. What does Jesus say? Take the bag of gold from him and give it to the guy who has what? 10. Those who have, for those who have will be what? They will have a what? When will they have an abundance? In the renewal of all things. Okay, in the kingdom. As for those who do not have, even what they have, Jesus says what? Be taken from them, and throw that worthless servant outside into the what? The darkness, where there is weeping and gnashing of teeth. Who's teaching this? Not me. Who is this? This is Jesus. So let me ask you, does it matter how we invest our lives according to Jesus? Yeah. Does it mean that we've all got to be as fruitful and productive as Lauren or Cal or some other Christian leader? No. What does it mean? I have to do what? I have to take what? What God has entrusted to me and work with it. Yeah. I'll never forget there was a woman who was a charwoman but brilliant. This was in England. And the guy had bricks in his kitchen. And she was a bright woman, but she was a charwoman. And so he just encouraged her a little bit. And he said, what's underneath the bricks? You know what was underneath there? Ants. And so she took that first step, and he kept challenging her more and more to learn more and more about the entomology of ants and all of the things. She finally wrote a work that was published, and this charwoman became a very wealthy woman. What did she take? She took what she had right there, and she was encouraged by a master who loved her, and she did something with it and turned it into something significant. How many of you have been given some pretty big gifts? If you better raise your hand right now, you're in a world of trouble. Okay, we all have. Every one of us in this room, right? I love the way Rick Warren spells this out, what God uses in our lives. He talks about our shape, okay? And turn it into an acronym. If you want to write this down, do so. The S stands for spiritual gifts. God has given every person in this room spiritual gifts. They are charisms. Charis is the word, Greek word for grace. And a charisma is a grace gift that God invests in all of us by the work of the Spirit. So we all have at least a gift. So we've given spiritual gifts. The next thing is heart. The H is heart. It's your passion. How many of you have a passion? Huh? Yeah, we've all got passions. And I'm not just talking about the kind for your wife. I'm talking about that, and that's good. I'm talking about what are we really passionate about in life? I went up and spent an hour and a half with Bill Twerty. My wife has given me a gift this summer. I'm going to go spend 6 days with Bill Oyster building a bamboo fly rod up in North Georgia. So I went over to Twerty's. Twerty is passionate about building bamboo fly rods and talked about how to build them. And then we took two of them out on the gold tees on the Dolphin course. And people thought we were crazy. We're out there throwing fly rods. You know, he says, I want you to I'm passionate about fly fishing. I love it. And one of the things in Sun Valley, Jane will tell you, we had more people, more relationships develop for Christ through fly fishing and skiing. I'd tell whoever was in church on Wednesday mornings during ski season, I'd say, hey, if you want to ski, show up at the bottom of Baldy at 9 o'clock Wednesday morning. She called it my play day. And we'd ski our brains out till 12:30, 1 o'clock, because 3,200 feet of vertical straight down and no lines. Your legs are worn out after about 3.5 or 4 hours. I introduced more guys to others through that. Tuesday nights during the winter, we'd go tie flies, tell lies about fishing. And we had more fun with that. And it was through the passion that we all shared for doing something together that the Lord used that. So your spiritual gifts, your passion. The A, it's your abilities. What abilities do you have? Lauren, who knew the gifts of playing the piano until she sat down at the bench this morning? What an ability. What abilities do you have? you know, that God's given, that you have developed these incredible abilities. The P, S-H-A-P, is your personality. Have any of you noticed that there are some recovering extroverts, of which I are one, and my poor wife is this, she's this introvert, and I walk into it. When we were first married, she would say, please don't forget that I'm at the party, okay, because I'm wandering off saying hi to everybody, and poor Jane's, she finally finds one person who'll talk to her over in the room. We don't all have the same personality. We've each got a personality. I'm a mile wide and an inch deep. She's a mile deep and an inch wide. But each of us, God wants to use the personality. Here's the last one, your experiences. In the 5 years, my last 3 years of high school, first 2 years of college, I've told you those were not very good years. But you know what? God doesn't waste anything. When I sit down with people who've been a screw-up, I can go, my picture was in the dictionary next to that. I can identify with you, and I want to tell you how God can work in your life. God doesn't waste a thing that's been given to you. Each of you have a shape, spiritual gifts. You've got a passion. You've got abilities. You've got a personality, and you've got experience, and that is the treasure that God has entrusted to you. How are you going to use it during the time that you're here that's going to make a difference in the kingdom when it comes? Something to think about, isn't it? The last parable of Jesus. This is the day after. I think this is day 244 in the book. But so you've got three parables. The first one was about the what? The 10 what? 10 virgins. And what was the issue there? They fell asleep, right? They weren't watching. The parable of the bags of gold was what? Use your talents in the time that you've been given. Now we're going to have the sheep and the goats. Three parables, one after another. You think Jesus is making a point here? Oh, yeah, I think so. When the Son of Man... Have we heard that before? Okay, when he, what's the next word? He is coming in what? Glory. Who's coming with him? The angel band. What's he going to do? Who's going to gather before the throne? I have a hard time picturing that, folks. I'll be honest with you. I mean, all of the nations of... How many cells do you have in your body? Come on, doctors, help me out here. North of 7 billion. Am I right? North of 7 billion? Yes? Can I get a vote from the doctors in the room, please? Okay, here's my question. Does your brain have any problem managing 7 billion cells? Huh? No, not at all. Does God have a problem maintaining an intensely personal relationship with every human being on the planet? Absolutely none whatsoever at all. All the nations are going to be gathered before them, and he's going to separate the people one from another like a what? You think the people that are listening to him understand this? Absolutely. They're shepherd culture. He's going to separate the sheep from the goats. He's going to put the sheep on his what? Over on the good hand, and the goats where? Over on his left hand. Jane and I went to a camel market in Saudi Arabia in the town of Hofuf. There were probably 3,000 camels at this place, but there were also thousands of sheep and goats. Do you know how to tell the difference between, because they look the same? I've got a picture of two Saudis on a Vespa with three big sheep on this Vespa with these two guys. Okay, how? I've got another one where the Saudi guy kicked his wife out of the cab and loaded all of the sheep into the cab, and he took off with them. All the sheep and the goats looked alike. Do you know how to tell them apart? The goats are butting heads. They're always butting heads with each other. okay? I'm not going to name names, but some come to mind. All right? Okay. Then the king will say to those on his right, what's the first word? Come, you who are what? What do I invite you to take? And what is our inheritance? The kingdom prepared for you since when? How many of you like it when your kids come home at Christmas? I mean, my wife goes into just this crazy mode and getting everything ready because it's just such a joy to have your family, right? To have your kids with you at Christmas when they come. And when they come, you want that experience. I want you to understand this. You have a Father. And the Father who loves you wants to do nothing more. Not just to love you. He's been preparing a place to celebrate you from the beginning of creation. I'm from Texas. I'm good at exaggeration and hyperbole. I'll tell you this, there's no way in the world you can exaggerate what you just read. He's got your, I love this, he's got your picture on his refrigerator door. Okay? Take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. Okay, now, Jesus says, I was what? And what did you do? What was he next? And what did you give me? I was a what? What did you do? I needed what? What did you do? I was what? What did you do? I was in. And what did you do? Then the righteous will answer. What do they say? Lord, when did we see, what's the next word? When did we see you hungry and feed you? When did we see you thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick and in prison and go visit you? The king will reply, truly I tell you, what's next? Whatever you did for what? One of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you what? Did you ever interview Mother Teresa? Didn't have the privilege. She's interviewed everybody else in the world. I just wondered if you'd interviewed Mother Teresa. When people would talk to Mother Teresa, one of the questions they would ask her is, how do you do what you do with the people on the streets of Calcutta, covered in sores, filthy and dirty? How do you do what you do? Do you know what her answer was? She said, I see the face of Jesus in them. He says, inasmuch as you did it unto one of the least of these, you what? You did it unto me. Were they aware of who they were doing it to? No, they just did it. Then the king say to those on his left, depart from me, you who are, what's the next word? Cursed into the eternal fire, prepared for whom? The devil and his angels. I was hungry, and you gave me what? Nothing. I was thirsty, and you gave me nothing. I was a stranger. What did you do? Nothing. I needed clothes. What did you do? Nothing. I was sick and in prison. And what did you do? Nothing. They will answer, Lord, and the emphasis is 180 degrees away. When did we see what? You. Oh, if it would known it was you, oh, we'd have stepped up. Yeah, we'd have done everything you needed if we knew it was you. And Jesus says to them, truly I tell you, whatever you did not do for one of the least of these, you did not do, what are the next two words? And they're going to go away to eternal punishment, but the righteous to what? Eternal life. Last night, as I was working my way through these things, the parable of the 10 virgins, it's really about our relationship with the King, that we're expecting Him to come. The parable of the bags of gold, it's about how we use the resources that we have been given, the shape that we've been given. And the sheep and the goats, it's really about how we fulfill the responsibility that's been entrusted to us as those who have been graced by God. So that's all Jesus has to say to us this morning. Well, we're not done, Betsy. You can't leave yet. I got 3 minutes. So, yeah. Lauren hasn't opened the door back there. Yeah. So what strikes you about what we heard from Jesus this morning? Anything. Not all at once. John's question, how literal is this to be taken? What do you think? Yeah. John's point is he's speaking this into what culture? The Jewish culture of what period of time? The first century. Boy, what's that? Tikkun Olam, Tikkun Olam, to heal the world. Okay, it's the Jewish concept of that. But bottom line in that last parable, what was the attitude of the goats toward people in need? One of what? Complete indifference, right? That's what Jesus is speaking to. Can any one of us meet the needs of the whole world? What's the answer? No. But what can I do? Person next to me. Yeah, the person next to me. What did Mother Teresa see in the face of the people on the streets of Calcutta? Face of Jesus. You know, if you and I just begin to look at others, in all of our woundedness and our brokenness, and somehow have the grace to see in them the face of Jesus, maybe my response will be a little different in some way. So great question. Anybody else? How many of you find this challenging? Yeah, I mean, this really challenges it right to the core, doesn't it? But what's the encouragement in this? I wake up every morning and walk into that day. Let His words be my words. His actions be my... Zig Ziglar. I love Zig Ziglar. He says you can wake up in the morning and you can do one of two things. You can say, good Lord, morning. Or you can say what? Good morning, Lord. One or the other. I'm reading Dallas Willard again. Dallas says, you know, the one power God has given us is the power to think. And by this power that He's given us to think, we are able to choose how we invest our lives, right? We're able to choose. How many of us, the thinking about the recreation of all things, how many of you like to get, when good stuff's going on, who wants to get in on it? Huh? I talked to Carl Tallerty this morning. I hate him. They got 47 sailfish, and nobody invited me to get in on that with them last week. Oh, man, I would have loved to be in on that. When something good's going on and you want to get in on it, I think that's what Jesus is trying to say to us. Listen, something awesome is going on. Don't miss it. Invest in it. Get in on it. And when you get in on it, is it easy all the time? Of course not. Just like anything that you've done has never always been easy, but is it going to matter in the end? What's the answer? Oh, yeah, because when He comes, enter into the kingdom that the Son of Man has been preparing. Say your name for, come on, say your name. He's been preparing, say your name for, since the creation of the world. And you know what I think the parable ends up by saying? Don't miss it. Don't miss it.